Moncrief on News Talk.
Where is it? Where's my pot? Has anyone seen my pot?
We have it here.
Oh, well, give it to me.
Could you sit down for a second, please?
What's going on?
We think you have a problem.
What are you talking about?
You're addicted to tea.
Tea? Seriously?
The other day I heard you say, I don't feel right unless I have my cup of tea.
Yeah, but come on, everyone.
Your professor says that you're drinking it during his lectures.
Of course, but you need a cup just to get through his lecture.
Indeed. Do you even hear yourself?
I don't have a problem.
When it started, when you were drinking it just for fun, we all were.
One with the Sunday papers.
Something to wash down a hobnob watching Gogglebox.
Yeah.
Now it's one to get you going in the mornings.
It's drinking it in the mornings.
It's breakfast tea.
4 or 5 cups before lunch.
And when you take your first sip, you make this noise.
I can handle it, all right?
Your behaviour has changed.
You've become really aggressive.
No, I haven't.
Really?
You didn't scald the pot. That's too weak. That's too sweet. That's too cold.
And it's affecting your health.
Your teeth have started to change colour.
You burnt your tongue the other day.
It's my choice, okay? It's not as if I'm hurting anyone else.
We don't think you should visit your grandmother anymore.
Why not?
She's an enabler.
She's 86.
And she's too far gone, but you still have a chance.
I can't just cut it off. It's not like turning off a tap. I'll get mild headaches.
We understand. That's why we're lowering the dosage.
It's too late for me.
We're going to start you off on green tea.
No.
Then peppermint.
Please.
Sorry. Then it's going to have to be chamomile.
Chamomile? It tastes like gone off water.
That was Foil Arms and Hog there on tea that we were talking. Jeez, green tea, that's a bit harsh. To put him on that, we were talking about tea at the start of the show in reaction to the shock news that Andy Burnham, the new British Prime Minister, likes to put the milk in first before he puts in the tea bag and the hot water. Also, we were talking about a few various things as normal with Maya and Donal in 4 questions. Donal was talking about scams. And just the amount of them. I got an account security call. Fella told me they were looking into a €1,300 transfer to an overseas account. I had about a tenner in my account, so I went along with it for a while out of curiosity. Was fairly convincing. In fairness, that's probably the more scary thing of all. Maya was also saying she did watch the final of the World Cup, even though she'd no great interest in the World Cup in general. The texter says, did you see not many Spanish players barely shook hands with Trump and then try to attempt his down under dance? Says a tinge of cringe, says Devon. Anyway, our current heat wave might have come to an end, but at this stage, it might be wildly optimistic to assume that we won't be having another one before the summer is out. And on the continent, of course, the situation is far more severe. This is impacting people's lives in all sorts of ways, and one of them is exercising or working outdoors. It can be extremely dangerous. We're joined by the environmental journalist John Gibbons. Afternoon, John.
Hi, Sean.
Now, I suppose this is not something, this is all new to us, but even over in those two heat waves, people could have, like, got themselves in a very serious situation if you tried going for a run in the middle of the day kind of thing.
For sure. I mean, the first thing to say, of course, is that heat is very dangerous. And I know in Ireland, when we get a few warm days or a warm week or two, it's a sort of an unofficial national holiday. That's understandable, given our background climate. But certainly what we're seeing in Europe and elsewhere across the world is increasingly dangerous heat. And that plays itself out, of course, in all kinds of ways. One of them is that it is increasingly dangerous for, as you said, for outdoor workers, that they're a real threat, whether that's construction, whether it's in farming. There's so many people whose jobs take them outdoors, and they have no choice in that matter. Now, unions across Europe have been pushing to have hard limits brought in to protect workers. And there is some support at EU level for this. So the unions are looking particularly for a hard ceiling of 30 degrees centigrade for basically to allow extended breaks where workers are facing that outdoors. And in the case where they're taking vigorous work, that limit should be lowered to 27 degrees. Of course, heat does all kinds of strange things to the human body, and this is why it's so dangerous. And I'm sure many of your listeners will have heard of heat stroke.
Mm.
And heat stroke is an extraordinarily dangerous phenomenon, which occurs when your internal body temperature, and I suppose for clarity, we all have an internal thermostat, and it's set to 37 degrees centigrade. Now, it doesn't matter, Sean, whether you live in the northern Finland or whether you live on the equator. Your internal thermostat is set to 37. That's our species. Mm. Now, once you nudge outside of that range, particularly when you hit 40 degrees centigrade, you're now in heat stroke. Now, at 40 degrees centigrade, the barriers in your body between the blood vessels and your intestines and so on, they start to dissolve. So you essentially begin to melt. It's a gruesome process. So essentially, heat stroke is extremely dangerous. Between 20 and 60% of people who are hospitalized with actual heat stroke will die. Right. And those who survive it can take up to a year to recover. So people kind of think of overheating as kind of, I'll cool down again.
Yeah.
But in fact, you get profound physiological damage that in many cases is irreversible. And of course, the people at most risk of heat stroke are those with the greatest external exposure to high temperatures combined with exertion. So our athletes, Sean, for example, I know we've just been looking at the World Cup, and you really would worry that we're going to see a fatality sooner or later, whether it's in tennis or in soccer or other elite sports that are played outdoors. And I watched, as I'm sure most people did, quite a bit of the World Cup, and I really felt for the players, because it might say, for example, 30 degrees in the stadium, but down at pitch level, people who are in directly exposed to sunshine, the experience in your body can be 10 to 12 degrees warmer. So their bodies will be feeling like they're being exposed to 42 degrees centigrade.
Yeah.
And that again has very, very negative consequences. Now, there is a flip side to this as well. And the flip side, which a recent study looked at, is that a reduction in exercise, in outdoor exercise particularly, but in exercise generally, if we see significant reductions in exercise, the projections from scientific research is that up to 500,000 people more will die as a result of the diseases, lifestyle diseases related to being sedentary. So it's one of those paradoxes that while there's great dangers associated with overexertion, particularly in high temperatures, what is far more dangerous to human physiology is to do nothing. We're simply not designed for it. So sedentary, so-called lifestyle diseases, they're the ones that we need to watch for. So I guess the message here is that, yes, we need to be super careful in the high temperatures. And that, by the way, includes in Ireland, because it's important to say that while we don't get the extreme temperatures yet that we're seeing in continental Europe, Irish people are less acclimatized.
Yes.
Which means we are suffering, Sean, at temperatures where in Europeans might be still reasonably comfortable. So we know, for example, we've had recently what they call tropical nights in Ireland. And a tropical night is defined where the temperature doesn't drop below 20 degrees centigrade. And that's a huge issue, particularly for people with underlying conditions like heart disease, for the elderly, for young children, because essentially the nighttime is when your body cools off and recovers. And a lot of the mending of the cellular level mending happens during the night. If you can't sleep, if your sleep is broken and disturbed by high temperatures and you're unable to cool off, then apart from physical exhaustion the next day, you're also basically, it's like a form of creeping illness. And we see it, of course, many people in Ireland, unfortunately, are living in apartments, particularly apartments that don't have two aspects, which means that if heat gets into them, it can't get out again. And I've heard numerous people saying that they're really struggling with the heat and it's affecting their lives in the most extreme ways. And this isn't a conversation that many people in Ireland thought we would be having about Ireland. Mm. But it underlines that even, for example, well-insulated houses, which, of course, we all should have a well-insulated house, the paradox in Ireland of a well-insulated house is that it can become a heat trap, because your A-rated building, properly designed A-rated building, would be what's called passive. And what that means is it has mechanical ventilation. So as the house warms up, the air is exchanged. In Ireland, we don't really do passive houses. We just do A rating, which is great for the winter and for the autumn, but not good for high temperatures in the summer. That isn't to say, by the way, we shouldn't do it, because your badly insulated house will also perform badly.
Right? Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But it is one of the ironies that good insulation rating isn't particularly helpful, particularly if you have direct sunlight getting into your apartment and you don't have the ability to open, say, two windows on either side. And this is the thing we see with the planning in Ireland, that increasingly politicians are pushing for shoebox apartments. They're saying, they'll be grand. They're heat traps. And these can be, as we've seen in continental Europe, these can be death traps. And we know, Sean, from the three heat waves that have been experienced in Europe since May, basically one a month, we've had excess deaths related to the June heat wave just in France, across Europe, somewhere of the order of 20,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it does emphasize that these high temperatures, they represent a real threat to human physiology. And it is something to consider that such a narrow band that that we operate inside. And I often think, for example, people, you know, if we scale this up for a moment to the wider climate picture, you know, when we're talking about, for example, global temperature rises of 1 or 2 degrees, and people say, that's not much. I mean, for goodness sakes, the temperature changes 10, 15, 20 degrees, you know, in a day. Why does it matter? It matters, Sean, in exactly the same way as that physiology that I just mentioned to you. The Earth's, if you like, it's sort of underlying thermostat is set at a particular temperature. And as that temperature rises by 1 or 2 degrees, Earth systems break down in almost exactly the same way that human systems break down. Mm-hmm. And it's important because people are inclined to be dismissive of small temperature increases. Yet, if you went to your GP and said, my temperature is up 2 or 3 degrees, you're an emergency patient.
Yeah. Now, and the issue of working and exercising then, because as you said, it's actually it's just as bad, if not worse, if you start becoming sedentary. Does that mean we'll have to? And if you're a farmer, for instance, there's still crops to harvest. There's still cows to be milked. There's still things you have to do. You can't take the day off because it's too hot. So does that necessitate a kind of a situation where people are working at night or you know, parts of the day, you just can't do anything?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen adaptations to this already, for example, in some of the occupations that are particularly sensitive to this. So you see it in fruit picking, right? They're now starting fruit picking in the dark, early in the morning. They stop for an extended period during the day and maybe continue into the late evening. But particularly early in the morning is when you get the most relief from extreme temperatures. So there are workarounds, Sean, up to a level. But this is really the key issue, is what level are we no longer able to adapt? And it is also related, of course, to the humidity. Because, you know, I suppose when you exercise, right, your muscles essentially give off heat. That heat then has to be got, the body's got to eject that heat or else it overheats. So what it does is it rushes blood to your skin surface. That's why you look flushed when you're hot, because that's the blood at the surface trying to cool off. But the problem is then that blood has been taken away from the organs that you require for, like, your muscles.
Mm.
So you have a kind of a fight going on when you're overheated, that your muscles are looking for blood to do exercise, to do exertion. But your body is also trying to eject that blood as close to the skin surface as possible. And so there are things you can do, I should add. For example, obviously, if you can pour water over yourself, this is very helpful, because as the water evaporates from human skin, that is the equivalent of sweating. So it's one of the great tricks, and it's one I do myself, is a bottle of cold water down the back of your neck, let it run the whole way down. And that will sort of mimic for the body the effect of sweating. So that's a particularly effective one. But things we do need to be aware of is that with high humidity, now thankfully in Ireland so far we haven't suffered extremely high humidity, but there is a concept called the wet bulb temperature, which is surprisingly low. And the wet bulb temperature essentially means at 100% humidity, at what temperature do humans die? So this is at 100% complete humidity.
Yeah.
So it's reckoned, and this was studied using the fittest of models, which were US Marines soldiers. And they were out doing various exercises and they started dropping like flies. And what they found was that as the wet bulb temperature that they were being exposed to, these were jungle exercises, hit about the humidity hit 100%, but as the temperature hit about 30 degrees centigrade, the physiology stopped working. And these ultra-fit soldiers started collapsing onto the ground and had to be resuscitated.
Yeah.
So this is something that we're seeing, that it is possible to get deadly temperatures at lower lower temperatures because when you add in high levels of humidity, it amplifies the effect. But now, I'm not trying to in any way be alarmist. There's almost no chance that I'm aware of 100% humidity in Ireland. It's simply, we're very fortunate, Sean. We have a maritime aspect to our climate here, which we should be thankful for every single day. The only reason we know, for example, that Britain, it was said that it was statistically impossible for surface temperatures in Britain to breach 40 degrees centigrade. July 2022, they breached 40 degrees centigrade.
Yeah.
It's going to happen again. We know it's going to happen again. And we know that those temperatures on the mainland Europe over the next 25 years are going to start creeping from the early 40s into the mid 40s and probably hitting 50 degrees, which is the equivalent temperature, Sean, I'm sorry to say, of the Sahara Desert. And again, these are not temperatures compatible with two things. Number one, humans. And number two, plants. Plants basically stop growing in these conditions. So if there is a message, and not that I'd be here to give a message or anything, but if I were, Sean, I would sneak in a tiny message, and it is this. We need to stop collectively. We need to stop burning stuff because all that stuff that we're burning is releasing all that carbon emissions. Those carbon emissions are heating us up like a furnace. And the reason that we're getting these extended, ever more dangerous heat waves is all the burning of stuff that we're doing. So if you've got the opportunity to get your solar panels up there, move to your electric car, you know, use your bicycle, use the train, and best of all, talk to your politicians. I'm sorry now if I've snuck in a little message.
I do apologize.
I
wouldn't expect that of you at all. Actually, just one, I'm going to read just one text from David and Goy, which is kind of demonstrates what you're saying, but in two different ways. Last week, people in Ireland went to the bog at 4 a.m. It was too hot to harvest turf in the afternoon.
Okay.
There's a solution and the problem.
That is a problem masquerading as a solution, you know. Oh, mother of God, will you stay out of the bog, for goodness sake?
John, thanks a million for coming into us. That was the environmental journalist, John Gibbons there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.